We're going to hear from a solidly contrary voice now. New Yorker Adam Greenfield is the founder and managing editor of the human-oriented urban planning firm Urban Scale. He's the author of Against the Smart City, hence contrarian. He worries about the top-down development and alarming-sounding issues like predictive policing, the embedded sensors and looped fibers. He's wary of what smart city developments like Hudson Yards mean for the spontaneous street scenes that he's come to love in New York.
This is just recapitulating an argument that's been going on in urban planning since the late 1950s. We literally, around 1961, with Jane Jacobs, began to question the doctrine of top-down urban planning. And as far as I'm concerned, we sort of settled this in the field in the 60s and 70s, that it was just not a particularly efficient way to go about making great urban place. And that it neglected as much as it captured about the conditions and the circumstances that make for vitality and quality of life.
The criticisms of urban planners in New York particularly are generally associated with that when you take into consideration the people who are already there, they have perfectly good solutions that don't need any supplemental ideas from big developers. The developers of the Hudson Yards project would have us believe that because they have a blank slate and there aren't any people there now, that they can actually proceed in a development strategy that's, you know, fully digital, completely quantified, that's got everything under control and monitored, and that's a good thing. What's your assessment?
I just don't think that quantification has anything to do with quality of life or what it means to be an engaged citizen of a great urban place. I think that there's a very clear model of subjectivity and the urban citizen in the smart city vision in places like Masdar City in the United Arab Emirates or places like Songdo City in South Korea, straight through to Hudson Yards. What we see is that the people who are framing these visions really do perceive urban life as fundamentally being about security and convenience and safety and consumption. And even if we buy that these things are part and parcel of urban experience, which I don't, they tend to reserve those prerogatives for only a very few. And everybody else in the city is sort of treated as a material for the generation of data with which to feed the prerogatives of security and safety and consumption. Beyond that, it indicates to me that public and private agencies both are increasingly empowered to act on that in ways that I don't think our public discourse has really begun to reckon with.
Do you think there's a benefit to having computer-controlled lighting and lighting that keeps track of foot traffic and determines when lights need to come on, when they need to go off, that alert people about traffic conditions, that sort of thing? Is technology ever an answer in making cities better?
Well, there's always a benefit for somebody. The question is who enjoys that benefit and whether the people who generate that data or are exposed to it share in that benefit. The canonical example here is the traffic light system in Copenhagen, so-called smart grid of traffic lights that ostensibly definitely improves the traffic flow in Copenhagen by some considerable percentage. So, you know, if you were somebody who 2 years ago was stuck in rush hour traffic in Copenhagen and they installed the system and you're no longer subject to that kind of delay and that kind of hassle, I'm sure that you perceive some kind of benefit in this. But we don't often ask pointed questions like that. And as neutral and as objective as even that scenario seems, who wants to sit in traffic? Who wants to be subject to delay and hassle and headache? When we think of anything as complex and contested as a great metropolitan place, as one of the great cities of Earth, it's amazing that when you drill into just about any state of affairs, there's very, very little that's actually neutral and objective. There are very few things where you can make an intervention and everybody universally benefits from that. There will always be some party who benefits, and there will always be some party that relatively speaking, loses out. And what I find dishonest about the smart city rhetoric is that it almost always asserts that there are general or universal benefits without discussing that there are parties and there are interests in society that will always have these things folded back against them. And I think that there are organizations that, for commercial gain, are proposing to deploy these systems in our cities And I do not often think they're particularly forthright about the complete set of circumstances that they present the communities with into which they are deployed.
What's an alternative? I mean, with the idea that technology will be employed, that the cities will pay for it, and that things like, you know, 311 lines for information for citizens are viewed as democratizing, what do you think is an appropriate way to proceed?
Well, I would prefer to see investment in the fundamental infrastructures of daily life. I mean, I think that it's sort of a shame that in the States anymore we don't really do public funding of infrastructure. And it feels a little bit like a sideshow to me that we're claiming to be able to have the latest and the greatest, but our bridges and our highways and our streets are falling apart. You know, so if there is a limited budget to apply, I would prefer to see the fundamental platform of urban life get some tender, loving care.
Finally, Adam, you refer to spontaneous enjoyment of urban space as though it were an experience that you've had or a scenario that particularly delights you. What are you talking about, and what is it you would most not want to lose in the New York or city of your best memories?
You know, that's a beautiful question. Jane Jacobs talks gorgeously about what she calls the sidewalk ballet, this sort of spontaneous mixture of different kinds of people from different backgrounds, different walks of life, intermingling on the sidewalks of New York City. And to my mind, that is fundamentally what cities are about. Cities are an engine to expose us to difference, and we grow by way of our exposure to that difference. What truly concerns me about the smart city rhetoric is the degree to which it divides us into market segments, and it allows us to shrink ever further into the confines of cognitive and social bubbles. You know, with all due respect, if you want to live that way, then go live in the suburbs. That's not what cities are for. That's not what cities do for us. And I think to deploy technologies that begin to erode that diversity and mixture is to undermine the very value proposition of a great city.
Adam Greenfield is the founder and managing director of Urban Scale. He's the author of Against the Smart City. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Support for The Takeaway comes from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, funding research so patients do more than survive, they live their lives. Learn more at lls.org. From Lumosity, offering a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving, with brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a brain training program. Performance can be compared with global averages. Learn more at lumosity.com.